Hello, lacrosse friends, and welcome once again to Box La Beat on NLL Radio, also available on iTunes via Inside Lacrosse Podcasts. I am Steven Stamp, your host and an editor at ilindoor.com. Thanks so much, as always, for being with me. The Calgary Roughnecks started the season 3-1, even without Curtis Dixon in the lineup as he tried to negotiate a contract with the team. They eventually did come to an agreement, and the Roughnecks promptly lost three straight games. But they have won two straight since then, including a 17-12 win, a huge division win over the Saskatchewan Rush on Saturday of this past week, week 9 in the National Lacrosse League. And Curtis Dixon was a big part of that. He had 12 points through his first four games, pretty well below his average, the standard he has set through his career. But he exploded on Saturday with 11 points as Calgary won the game. Saskatchewan, meanwhile, kind of headed in the other direction. They have lost three straight, the first time they've done that in 6 years. But there are lots of positives, and they're not ready to hit the panic button. They're a team that tends to start slowly, and as captain Chris Corbeil tells me, he's seen some pretty good signs that they are getting back to where they need to be. But with three conference games coming up in a row, he knows they need to get things turned around sooner rather than later. Curtis Dixon and Chris Corbeil, fantastic guests here on Box La Beat on NLL Radio. Joining me on Box La Beat from the Calgary Roughnecks, tied in first place in the West, Curtis Dixon. Welcome to the show.
Steve, thanks for having me, buddy.
Hey, it's always good to get to chat, and you've got to be feeling pretty good. I saw your tweet, the It's About Damn Time tweet. Obviously, you're pretty happy to get a big game under your belt where you really felt like you're able to help your team the way that you're used to helping them.
But yeah, that tweet was more geared towards winning a game in Saskatoon, but I guess they go both ways as well.
Right. That's a good point. You guys hadn't ever won in Saskatoon. You go in and get one. But for yourself, I mean, 12 points in four games isn't a bad total, but everyone's just so used to the things you're able to do. You'd had a hat trick in the previous game after only scoring a couple goals, but then you explode with 11 points. And I mean, the sidearm shot was really on target, and you just looked like you were really feeling it on Saturday.
Yeah, it's you don't want to chalk things up to rust. You know, I've been playing lacrosse for 27 years and I had some time off there, so it was a little rusty coming back in there, but I think just, you know, it's credit to our whole offense. You know, we weren't playing great, you know, since I came back, and I put a lot of that blame on myself, and we were due for a big game, and thankfully, we were able to come out and put the pieces together and find the back of the net. So we were very happy with the outcome, and we're looking to keep that going moving forward for sure.
Everyone working very well. Tyler Pace had a big game, but I mean, you and Dane Dobie have created such chemistry over the years, and I thought Dobie was fantastic. I mean, he had 10 points as well on Saturday, and boy, when the two of you are clicking, it's got to be tough for defenses when you're such big threats from either side of the floor, plus, you know, Pace and Dutch and Lowen and everyone kicking in.
Yeah, exactly. We worked as a unit, and being able to play with Dane for my first 8.5 years in this league has been nothing short of spectacular. He's in my opinion, he's the most underrated player in the league. He doesn't get enough credit for the work that he does, and you know, he got his, I think, 800th point on the weekend, and he's been doing it year after year, and nobody works harder. Nobody wants to win more than that guy. So it's a real treat getting to be able to play with him.
When obviously you missed the early part of the season as you're trying to sort out a contract, and you mentioned you had a bit of a break, but you had to come back and have some rust. And what's it like when you're, I mean, not, there aren't that many situations like that in the National Lacrosse League. It's a little unusual. What was it like? I mean, it's not like you're talking every, you know, all the time, every day. Obviously, you're trying to get something sorted out, but you're also having to do the work to keep yourself so you're ready to play when you do come back. What was that whole time period like for you?
Yeah, it was weird. Like I said, I've, you know, been playing lacrosse forever, and not too often you get an extended period of time off, so it was a little different. But, you know, that being said, at the same time, it's the NLL, and you know, guys, not a ton of guys live in town, so for the most part, even during the season, you're kind of on your own for fitness and training. So not a whole lot changed there. I was, you know, I was able to, you know, get out and do my own training regimen and stay in shape, and but there's no real way to mimic, obviously, real game type situation. So when you do finally get back on the floor with your stick in your hands, it's a little different after having some time off. But you know, I've been able to kind of get my feet back under me and you know, create some chemistry with some of those new guys that are, you know, those fresh faces on our offense. And like I said, we were able to get it clicking last weekend, and that's something we're looking to continue moving forward here.
I mentioned off the top that you're now tied or virtually tied with San Diego. They're sitting at 4-3. You're at 5-4. Saskatchewan at 3-4, sitting a game back. So that was a huge win, because obviously you and Saskatchewan both 500 going into the game. You pull ahead of them. These games are so important down the road towards the end of the season for tiebreakers and just getting rolling, because it was for the, you know, for you guys hitting a bit of a lull. And but knowing that, you know, that one win can really turn things around in a hurry, and you're sitting in a pretty good position.
Yeah, for sure. That's, you know, the West is wide open this year. I think, you know, it's not a huge discrepancy between first and last place in our division. And those conference games are all, you know, you don't want to use the term must win at this point of the season, but they're massive games with huge implications moving forward. And you definitely want those, you know, those tiebreakers when the standings look like they do right now. So we've got that tiebreaker with Vancouver already, and we got the one under our belt with Saskatoon, and we got we got big games with Colorado and San Diego coming up here to split the series with those guys. So we got some, you know, big lacrosse games coming up, but obviously we're focused on this weekend in Buffalo against a really good team there. So It's gonna be a fun second half of the season for sure.
You mentioned in your interview after the game, you know, the defense playing really well. I think to me, Dan McRae has been one of the best defenders in the league this year. I think he's having a great season, and all around some pretty good things happening. One thing that we haven't seen maybe quite as much of is the Roughnecks getting out and running. Zach Currier will tend to run. Mitch Wild still running some, but it seems like the identity of the team may have shifted slightly this year with they're really focusing on, it looks like, playing defense first and letting the transition kind of come to them and letting the O do its thing. Is that kind of a conscious thing, or is that just the way it's been working out through nine games?
I think it's just the way it's been working out. You know, we've had a lot of young guys back there last year and fresh faces, and those guys have gotten some games under their belt, obviously, with, you know, like you said, the Zach Careers and the Tyson Bells of the world. And those guys are very good defenders. Obviously, they can push the ball, and they pick their spots well. You know, when they can push the ball up in transition, and you know, they're not making dumb decisions and throwing the ball away. Mm-hmm. They're taking their chances when they're given them, and when they're not, they're putting faith and trust in the offense to be able to get the job done. And that's the key to having a successful team, because, you know, you need one or two transition goals every night to be able to win in this league. And we've been doing that successfully. And I think that's something that we need to continue moving forward.
I think another facet of it is last year, Christian DelBianco had 17 assists. He's got 5 this year. He's a great passer as a goalie. And what I saw last year in the second half of the season was him really getting a sense of when to throw the long pass and when not to. I thought early in the season, he may have been forcing it a bit, trying to push it, being like, if there was any chance, he was throwing that ball down. And he really seemed to develop a good sense of, okay, this is a good opportunity. And then he'd make, I mean, some amazing passes. Some of the plays from him to Mitch Wild were just unbelievable. And he seems to be following through with that, like throwing the pass when it's there, but being really smart about not forcing things and causing turnovers that force the defense to start playing another shift right away.
Yeah, for sure. He's another one of those, you know, young guys that's got another year under his belt. And he, you know, I don't know if there's anybody in the league you'd want the ball on their stick making a full floor pass other than Christian. He's pretty incredible. He's, you know, he's got a better stick than most players in this league. So we have all the faith in the world in that guy. I mean, he's been lights out so far this year. And, you know, he's smart enough. He's been playing long enough to know, you know, like I said earlier, to pick and choose his spots. And he's getting better at that game by game. And we know we can count on him to make the right decision. And it's been showing for sure.
Boy, the way he moves too, and the way he handles the ball, he could be a throwback to like Buff McCready back in the old MSL days, who'd go up and run the point on the power play, and then head back and play net.
Yeah, you know what? He's pregame. He'll be out there with the, you know, he'll grab some for other guys, you know, short stick, and he'll be chucking the ball around. And he looks like a regular everyday, offensive player in the NHL. He's a pretty skilled guy, with that short stick in his hand. So it's pretty fun to watch him. And, you know, he's obviously one of the more athletic goalies in the league. And he can run around, and you'll see sometimes he'll make a save and he'll jet out into the corner to get a loose ball and run it up almost to the restraining line sometimes. So he's, like I said, he's a real treat to have on your team. He's a super athletic guy, and we're lucky to have him for sure.
I love watching him when you guys are down. I know you don't like being down at the end of games, but when you guys are pulling the goalie, he's passing guys like a defender who's played, to be fair, has played a hard 30-second shift and is, you know, heading to the bench with everything they've got. But Del Bianco will be sprinting past guys to get the extra attacker in. It's pretty crazy.
Exactly. And that's, you know what, and like you said, not a lot of people notice things like that, but that's a huge advantage for us to have, you know, a guy like that being able to run on and off the floor. A lot of teams, you know, they'll put their backups in that are fresh, that, you know, at that point in the game in order to get them on and off the floor. So that's huge for us. But, you know, like you said, we don't want to see ourselves in that situation too often, but it's a huge piece to have when we are.
I noticed you're really using the sidearm underhand shots the other night, which have been deadly for you at times. But again, we didn't see as many of the drives right to the net. And because it really looked like they were trying to take away that low slot area and keep you from getting right on top of the crease. Is that something that you kind of become aware of early in a game and think, okay, I'm going to have to go a little more over the top, use some different weapons tonight?
Yeah, it's the old kind of give what you're taking. And that's a good defensive sketch. And obviously they have been for years, and they don't give a whole lot of chances up right in front of their net. So they tend to try and keep you to the outside. And as an offense, I thought we did a great job moving the ball and getting, you know, those open outside shots. And I think the biggest difference between last game and the games prior was we were hitting our shots. We were getting those good looks, and they were falling for us. So it was nice to see. And, you know, it's not something you really want to rely on for an entire season. You do want to try and get yourself some easy goals in on top of the crease from time to time. But, you know, it was just one of those games where everything was kind of falling for us, and we'll take it, and hopefully it's a sign of things to come.
In terms of getting back into the groove with the team, not just on the floor, but in the locker room, I mean, there's some new guys on the club, obviously, with, you know, Reese Callies and Shane Simpson, Mike Salama, you know, a bunch of draft picks, but a pretty veteran core, a lot of guys back. Any challenges getting back in, or is it basically like you hadn't skipped a beat, just kind of walk into the dressing room and raring to go the first day and right back into the relationships?
Yeah, no, it was pretty easy transition. Like you said, we've got a few new faces, you know, on the offense. Dan Taylor, I obviously got to play with him this summer in Maple Ridge, and Dutch, I've played against him for years, so it was pretty easy to, you know, slide back in the lineup with those guys there. And you know, it's a great group. Like I've been around for, you know, 8.5 years now, and there's still some faces that have been there the whole time that I've been there, with, you know, Danny Mac and Mikey Carnegie and some of the other veterans there. And now it's a it's a really good group of guys. And then I know most guys talk about their teams like this, but you know, we consider ourselves a family. We're super close, and they definitely made it really easy for me to slide back in for sure.
Do you think there'd be any difference? Like you said, you've been playing for 27 years, haven't had a lot of extended breaks. You get basically four games off at the start of the season. You're still working to get ready, but not taking the kind of game wear and tear. Think it might make any difference down the stretch of an 18-game season into the playoffs, or is it, I mean, it's not like you missed two-thirds of a season or something.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's one way to look at it. I mean, anytime left is you know, it'll save your body a little bit, but, you know, I never change the way I play. I don't know if it ever shows going down the stretch if I ever look tired or fatigued or anything, but, you know, I approach every game and every practice the same way, and, you know, we're looking to go out there and perform to our best abilities and win. So I don't want to say it was nice to have time off, but, you know, it definitely helped the body mend some, you know, bumps and bruises. I'm playing, you know, basically from November to September year round. So it wasn't the worst thing in the world to, you know, have a little time off and like I said, mend some of those bumps and bruises that I had, but I'm just, you know, I'm happy to be back out there and playing with the fellas for sure.
You mentioned playing into September, and you got well into September this year, back in Maple Ridge, hadn't been in the WLA for a while. You'd won a Man Cup with Peterborough. It's still your Twitter cover picture is holding the Man Cup up above your head in your Lakers uniform. But you get back out to Maple Ridge, help them get to their second Man Cup final in three years, 16 and 18. And obviously didn't go the way you would have liked in that series, but it must be there must be some gratification or some satisfaction in getting back home and helping that team get so far in the season.
Definitely. And I know my first, you know, 4 or 5 years in the WLA when I first started playing Maple Ridge, we didn't have the best teams, and you know, we were kind of getting wiped out by the new West of the world out there. And so being able to go back and play for obviously a contender and kind of, you know, walk through the playoffs the way that we did was pretty satisfying. You know, being able to, you know, represent the Bruins in the Man Cup was a pretty cool experience. And like you said, it was obviously wasn't the ending that we hoped for, but it's, you know, it's a tough environment. Anybody knows it, anyone that's done it knows it's not easy going out east and playing in the Man Cup. So we were definitely happy to get there, not happy with the result, but it's definitely something to build on, and we're hoping to get back there and host one this summer.
A bunch of those guys on your defense in Maple Ridge cracking National Lacrosse League rosters in Vancouver, largely with Owen Barker and Zach and Colton Porter both making it. Zach playing all the time, Colton's kind of in and out a bit, but a bunch of those guys stepping up and earning their way in with largely with the way they've played and proved themselves over the summers, and especially the Porters facing, you know, the size. They're not big guys, but having watched them in a couple of Man Cups in person, it's pretty impressive just how gritty and feisty and in your face they are, just regardless of size. And it's kind of cool to see some of those guys getting their chance and performing pretty well. And I know for you, obviously being in the same division, you don't want to see them do well against you in Calgary, but it must be kind of nice to see some of those teammates stepping up into the big league.
For sure. That's it's awesome. And you know, I going into the season, you heard all the naysayers, not very many people were given, you know, Vancouver much of a sniff at anything this year when they looked at their roster, and not a lot of people knew about the, you know, the Owen Barkers and the Colton Porters of the world, but people that, you know, pay attention to summer lacrosse know what those guys are capable and what they can bring to your team. And it's been pretty cool seeing, you know, what they've been able to do so far early in this season. And you know, that Vancouver team's playing a lot better than anyone was going to give them credit for. So it's, you know, awesome. It's great for them and good for us for the summer. Obviously, those guys being able to get that experience, and even guys, you know, like Tyler Codron getting back in the league and, you know, showing his stuff and showing he's still got it. So it's cool to, you know, to be able to see your summer teammates, you know, being able to thrive in this league and, you know, show their stuff because they've never really had the, you know, a fair crack at it before. So it's definitely cool to see.
Yeah, and I mean, I think I would probably fall into that category of naysayers going into the season about Vancouver, because I looked at those guys and said, boy, that's a lot of guys without much experience stepping into the league together. And that can be very tough, and so much change in Vancouver. I'm a big fan of Chris Gill as a coach, and I figured he would eventually make it happen. But just I think the big thing for that team is just how feisty they are, like I mentioned before, and just how hard they play every night. And that obviously not a lot of fun to play against when you're on the other side of it, but boy, there's a lot of heart there.
Absolutely. Heart's the biggest thing, and something as an offensive guy, you know, those playing against those types of players, they make your life difficult, and they may not be the most skilled or the biggest guys in the world, but you know, they work their butts off, and they, you know, they work for every single thing that they get. And like I said, they don't make anything easy on you. So it's a tough style to play against. And, you know, so far it's been working out. They've been playing well recently. So we'll see if, you know, that can continue.
You mentioned you've got a big trip to Buffalo coming up this weekend. You've got some rivalry games, you know, a return engagement with Saskatchewan coming up. A lot of big games. Looks like you guys are starting to come together. Is the team feeling pretty confident that you're getting to close to where you want to be at this point?
Yeah, we're slowly getting there. I know you can't just, you know, play one good game and think you've made it and you're going to cruise your way through the rest of the season, but it's definitely promising and something to work off of. And like I said earlier, I know as an offense, we were happy with the way we were performing. We were averaging whatever it was, 10 goals, maybe even less than that a game since I came back. So it was definitely nice to be able to put up 17 against a team like Saskatchewan. And we know we've got a big test this weekend against a very good team in Buffalo that's playing very well right now. So we need to, you know, keep proving to, you know, everybody else and ourselves that, you know, we're capable of playing that way on a weekly basis. And in the league right now, that, you know, the parity is, you know, as wide as it's ever been, and any team can beat anybody on any given night. So we need to keep playing well and keep moving our way up the standings. And you know, Buffalo is not an easy place to play either. So we're excited for the challenge, and we're looking forward to, you know, getting out there and being able to play.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly is a lot of parity. Really is a wild, wild west out there this year. Appreciate you taking the time to come on. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, and good luck with the trip to Buffalo and through the rest of the season.
No worries, Steve. Anytime, buddy.
Joining me on the show is Boxall Beat veteran Chris Corbeil, captain of the Saskatchewan Rush. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks a lot for having me.
I think it's safe to say, actually I'm sure it's safe to say, that I've never had you on when the Rush are on a three-game losing streak before, so things are a little different this time.
Yeah, it's funny though, the way it works is that when we're winning the games, everybody wants to talk to the goal scorers and the goalie and all the high profile players, and then when a team starts losing, all of a sudden I start getting a lot more requests for the media stuff. So the burden of being a captain, I guess, is is having to deal with all the negativity in the media and stuff. But yeah,
I've had you on at some pretty good times for the club too.
You have. That's true. You have. You've. That's why I'm a recurrent guest. So yeah.
There we go. It's early in the season, but it's, you know, 7 games in. You're 3-4, which is a little unusual. And I think over the last few years, you and I have talked about how you tend to have slow starts to the season. And I actually recently have likened it to the New England Patriots, where you take some early season stuff to figure out what you are this year, where you're going, kind of get your heads back rolling and on straight, and then get it going. But with all the guys, I mean, with Ryan Dilks off at firefighter training and Jeff Cornwall as well, and then Adrian Sorchetti gone to San Diego in expansion draft, there are more changes this year and maybe more things to get your heads around.
Yeah, certainly. It's only three names. You can get through them pretty quick, but that's a lot of change on our back end, and three guys that logged a lot of minutes for us too, right? And three intricate, very intricate parts of our defense. So, you know, it's been challenging for sure. And obviously, you know, if I'm evaluating the season, I think our front end, you know, they're not playing fantastic, but they're playing pretty good. And, you know, I would say the one issue with their offense has maybe been consistency and getting a full 60 minutes out of them. But if you look at the numbers they're putting up, they're good enough where in the past, you know, that kind of goal production was winning us games. Mm-hmm. And winning us games pretty easily. So I really think the biggest issue with us so far this year has been on the back end. And, you know, you talk about those three guys, and maybe you don't, you head into the season, you don't realize how much you're going to miss those three guys because, you know, on a back end like ours, those guys probably don't get the recognition that they deserve to, but you realize just how valuable they are once they're gone.
I guess I looked at it going into the season thinking there's going to be some real challenges to adjust to this and deal with those guys being gone. But I figured Nick Bjelica didn't play a full season last year. He can slide in. He's familiar with the team. He's a solid defender. Matt McGrady has been just knocking on the door to get more playing time. Yep. and clearly deserved it. Jordy Jones-Smith, that we've both seen play in Ontario plenty. I've probably actually seen him play more because he plays a lot when you're, you know, when you and Kyle Rubish and guys have been busy finishing up NLL playoff runs. So I've seen him play a ton. I figured he'd step in pretty well, but it's like you said, you know, it's three guys. Doesn't take long to go through the names, but that's a third of your defense. That is changing and a lot. It's not that, you know, Bjelica and McGrady and Jones Smith can't play solid roles, but they're playing different roles than what they're used to, right?
Yeah, that could be it. And again, I don't want to point the finger. I think, you know, Bill came back and was great for us after he, I don't know if he missed one or two games, but he was good once he got back. He was doing everything we could have asked from him. And a guy like Jordy, he's been fantastic. So it's not even so much that those guys aren't able to fill the roles of those guys or anything like that. Because, I mean, for the most part, we're pretty happy with the new guys in the lineup. It just, I think we need better from everyone, but, you know, defense is, it's a finicky thing where you really need, and maybe it's the same thing on offense. I just have no experience. So I don't know what I'm talking about, but you really need the chemistry and the familiarity, and there's just something off, and it's tough to pinpoint because if we were able to, we'd be able to, you know, address it and hopefully fix it and move on. But, we're struggling to find that chemistry right now, and you know, maybe it just takes a little bit of time and to figure out how to adjust and play with one another. Because, you know, for the last 3 years, I've been playing, you know, almost exclusively with Adrian Sorachetti on my line and D-ing up guys on that right side with him. And then if somebody's coming over, it's usually Matt Hossick or Jeremy Thompson. And I'm just familiar with those guys, but now all of a sudden it's Nick Bjelica, and he played it a little bit differently when he was playing that side with Jeff Cornwall. So, we play the same system, but there's just subtle nuances and differences and getting familiar with guys and that kind of thing. And then, you know, another big part of it that you got to highlight is the loss of Jimmy Quinlan. And, you know, we took Jimmy for granted for so many years, and it was great having him on the back end. But if ever there was a year you wanted to have Jimmy on board, it would be this year when you have so much turnover on that back end. Because, you know, we were normally dealing with maybe, okay, one guy, and we get one new guy in. Next year, okay, one guy's out again, but it's only one. So, you know, teaching that system to the practice players and then that one guy. But now all of a sudden you got three or four guys that are in the lineup every night that haven't played with this group in this system in regular season games consistently for the past X number of years. And it's challenging having a new coach, or it's challenging for that new coach. And, you know, again, we're very happy with Jeremy, and guys love playing with him, and he's got a great track record. But for the most part, this is a new system to him as well. So there's a little bit of learning that for him and learning how to work with our group, because, you know, whenever you're managing a new team of players, a new group of defense, there's a learning process that goes along with that too. So all that turnover is definitely leading to some challenges for us.
Yeah, as you were talking about that, I knew you weren't throwing Jeremy Talivi under the bus, but like you said, if ever there was a year where you'd want the continuity in the coaching position, it would be now when you have so much turnover among the players. It probably would have been easier last year if, you know, if Jimmy had gone on to his other opportunities last year for Jeremy to step in when there was more continuity on the floor and vice versa.
Yeah, so I blame Jim for all this. So.
Yeah, I think that's fair. So, like we said, you do have had a tendency to have some slow starts, but it's always come together, usually before this point of the season. But are you seeing things that are working that make you feel like, okay, we're getting closer to it? Or just, I mean, against Calgary, there were still some of those breakdowns where it just seems so strange watching you guys, because we are used to over the years when an opponent goes somewhere, like you said, you know, if you do something, Adrian Sorchetti is right there. And you just have that sense with each other where it just seems so natural that the next guy is in the position to take away, you know, on the slide, take away an opportunity. Whereas there's a half step off at this point in a lot of situations, and against the talent that you face in the NLL, that half step is plenty to give guys good scoring chances.
Yeah, I think you're bang on, but I definitely think there have been a number of times, you know, throughout the past 3 weeks and even the New England game where we've shown flashes of brilliance and a great defense. And it's just, unfortunately, they're just too few and far between. We need more consistency. But if I look at the last three games we've played, Georgia, that first quarter was one of the worst quarters I've ever been a part of on any team. We were so, you know, underprepared and bad out there. Just, we were flat out bad. But for three quarters, we actually played pretty decently, and we didn't have a ton of breakdowns, at least system-wise, defensively. And so we come out of that game thinking, okay, you know, we cost ourselves that one with a bad start, but we're not hitting panic because I thought we played well for three quarters here. Toronto
and against
was a
team, sorry, and against a team that you just met in the championship final, you know, pretty recently. So
yeah, certainly, and that was exactly it. It's I mean, Georgia is a fantastic team, and we knew that heading in, which is why we were so disappointed with our start, because we knew we were going to need a consistent effort for 60 against that team. They're a great team, and a team no one would be surprised to see come out of the East this year, right? So that's you're not feeling terrible. And then, you know, Toronto, another bad start. And then again, we sort of get things going and we let Adam Jones really beat us, but we kept Schreiber and Hellier in check. And, you know, we're not feeling too bad. And then all of a sudden, Calgary, a team that's been struggling offensively, and we finally get that great start and we're up 5-1. And we just can't seem to step on their throats, and we let them crawl back into it, right? And it just seems like we're making a, you know, we're that half step behind, if you will, or guys just aren't exactly where they're supposed to be. And it almost feels like maybe we had gone through that in previous years, but for whatever reason, you know, this year, the slightest mistake and it winds up in the back of our net. And teams seem to be capitalized on us, and it's a combination of, you know, we're almost there, but we're not quite. But also, it feels like, man, every bounce that could go against us sort of feels like it is right now. And maybe it just feels like that because we're losing, but it seems that way. So I guess the long-winded answer to sum up the answer is, like, yeah, I've definitely seen things to put my mind at rest and to not say, oh, you know, we need to start making trades or adjusting personnel or anything like that, because I know we have the talent and the group back there to do it. It's just about doing it more consistently and then doing it for a full 60 minutes and putting it all together.
Are you sensing much difference in the way Derek Keenan is dealing with the club this year, or the way he's responding? Because he tends to be, I mean, he's a passionate lacrosse coach and clearly gets right in there, but he's also a very calm influence on a team.
Yeah, you know what? I have. And again, this is a team that hasn't dealt too much with adversity, so it's not like I can say, oh, last year when we lost our three games in a row, this is how I reacted. But when I look back to my first couple years with the Rush, you know, my first year at least, we had a terrible record. And, you know, he would, I'm trying to think of how I can put this delicately, but he would, you know, fly off the handle a little bit more than he does now, or how he has reacted. He's been calm, and I think it comes with the group he's dealing with, right? I mean, we're not exactly an old group, but a fairly veteran group. A lot of guys that have been there and sort of done it and won some championships, and so, you know, it's not a ton of yelling and screaming, and it's again doing a lot of highlighting the positives and just reminding guys that, you know, we can be better, and it's just a matter of playing consistency. But he's done his best, I can definitely tell, to remain positive and to that calming presence that you talked about, or that calming force. He's definitely had more of that, and there hasn't been too much of him tearing a strip off us or yelling at and screaming at us that of the Derek Keenan we might have seen in 2012 or 2011.
Yeah, and 2012 was your first year there, right?
I can't even remember. We went 6-10 and went to the finals and lost to Rochester. Somehow we walked through the West playoffs after a very subpar year.
Which, I mean, is another factor when you think about, you're sitting here at 3-4 and not the way you normally would go and everything. But on the other hand, 4 out of the 5 teams in the West make the playoffs. You're sitting in a playoff spot right now. You're only 1 game out of first place still with the way things have been up and down. So it's not like it is a desperate time yet, even if you haven't been playing the way you'd like to for the most part.
Yeah, we picked a good time to go on this skid, I guess, with such a high percentage of the teams on our side making the playoffs. You nailed it, right? 4 out of 5 make it. Now, I definitely want home floor advantage, because as anyone in the league will tell you, it's huge in Saskatchewan. And when we play there, I think that home floor advantage is worth goal and a half, maybe 2 goals. Because the energy is fantastic, and I got to believe it's a little intimidating for the opposition to get in there and play, especially when some momentum starts going against you and it's loud and the fans are really on top of you. So it's, you know, it would be fantastic to lock up, you know, home floor advantage for the playoffs as we've managed to do in the past, or at least through the West. But it allows us to sort of say, okay, let's stay calm. Let's look at the big picture here. All you need to do is finish 4th. And then it's really the same deal for everybody, aside from that home floor advantage I talked about. You know, there's no bye this season that you're fighting for to get to first place. Right. So, you know, and they're 1-game series. So it really is helping us remain calm and just say, listen, we got time to figure this out. You're not supposed to be playing your best ball in early February anyways, so let's not hit panic and let's work through this and let's figure it out and remain positive and really just keep the faith in one another. And then the last thing you mentioned, which I agree with, is I'm not sure you said this explicitly, but, you know, I look at the East, and that division's looking a lot more dangerous than the West right now. And,
it is.
You know, that's not to take anything, like, I'm including ourselves in this, but I think we're 1-3 this year against Eastern opponents, and 2-1 maybe against the West or something like that. I'm not sure if that math adds up on the fly here, but the Buffaloes, the Georgias, the Torontos, the New Englands are looking more impressive, at least, than anybody on our West side. So, you know, we're benefiting from that a ton too. So, you know, as bad as it's been, you mentioned it, we're only 1 game out of first.
I did check, and 2012 was your first year with the Rush, of course, 10-11 in Buffalo after you got drafted by them in the second round, and then came to Edmonton as part of the massive turnaround with the club in 2012, where Derek Keenan really built with the, you know, the back end, the goaltending defense first, and then was gradually kind of adding the offense. And that's, I guess, the thing is the defense, even as the offense has become so powerful in Saskatchewan, I think we've always, everyone outside and probably inside has looked at the defense is such so much the core of the team, as because it was built that way, built around the defense. And so I think we're all kind of looking back, saying, standing back, saying, oh, so they are like other teams, that they do have to adjust to changes. And they do have ups and downs, you know, because you've been pretty consistent over the last 4-5 years, really.
Yeah. And I mean, you look at that group that was there in 2012, and, you know, it's myself, Rubish, Mitski, you know, Dilks isn't playing for us this year with his firefighting commitment. But, you know, those four guys, we logged a lot of minutes on that team, and we're still logging lots of minutes with this group. So the core and the foundation hasn't changed that much. But I mentioned it earlier, you know, when you're only having to replace one guy in the defense every year, it's a lot easier than all of a sudden having to replace three, which is the real test. But you know what? I think it's we've got this reputation, and I'd like to think we've earned it, and we've done a great job in this league, you know, since you know, I mentioned 2012 wasn't the best season, but we finished it pretty strong. And then 2013, 2014, we did really well, and we've turned it on. So this is a challenge for this group, especially the defensive group. And I think I read somewhere today, I think we're 8th in goals against this season. So you know what? It's a test for this group, and it's a good opportunity to show everyone that we haven't lost it, that we haven't lost a step, that, you know, we can still be relied upon to have one of the best, if not the best, defensive cores in the league. And you know, we just got to go out and prove it now. We got 11 games left this season, and it's a great opportunity, and it gives us a little bit of bulletin board material now. You know what? We've always been the team that, you know, the experts were picking to win, and I think, you know, when you go in and you play a reigning champion or a former champion or something like that, that game's probably circled on the bulletin board. And I know Calgary's always fired up to play us because we've had their number and all that stuff. And now all of a sudden, you know what, we're maybe sliding into that underdog role a little bit, which is something we're unfamiliar with, but I'm looking to sort of embrace it and use it to motivate me and our back end.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'd go as far as underdog yet.
We're getting there, though? Or?
You're getting there. You're in the neighborhood, I guess. Two things that you said that I want to pick up on. One, you talked about, you know, how much you like to get first place, have home floor throughout the Western playoffs, and you know, get that bye week. If you were able to come on and finish first this year, will you miss the bye week, or was it always? I know I've talked to coaches and players who say, you know, we really don't like the week off. You like it because you can heal up at the end of the season and you can prepare. But at the same time, I know teams, especially when it's going well, you want to just keep getting out there every week.
Yeah, I really think it's circumstantial. One year I loved the bye week. It was 2017, and I hurt my groin the last regular season game of the season. And there was like an extra bye week thrown in before the start of the finals. And, you know, guys were sort of complaining about it that were healthy, but I was like, this is perfect for me because it just gave me more and more time to get better. So I obviously had the bye weekend off. I missed the series against Colorado, another bye weekend, and then all of a sudden I was ready to go against Georgia, which was great. Obviously, we didn't get the result we were looking for there. But in that scenario, I loved it. And then, you know, you said it, when you're playing well, you want to keep it going. And it's hard too, because I think a bye weekend impacts a fly-in team like ourselves more than it impacts a team like Toronto, who, you know, they may not be playing, but at least they can get in good reps without having to fly everybody out to some weird location and having a practice on a floor that isn't their home turf, kind of thing, right? Because it's very rare you get to. It works for everybody that you can fly in that weekend and still get into practice. And
sometimes not even turf, right? Sometimes you're like,
yeah,
on the gym
exactly.
Floor.
Like this season, we haven't had one practice, I don't think, on a Friday night, like when we arrive in Saskatchewan on the turf. It's we go on this like sport court in some indoor soccer facility, and of course it's not the same dimensions, and so it's never as good. And but again, like, you know, you compare that to Toronto, they probably don't mind it as much because they got that beautiful facility at the track there, and they can get in probably some good game simulations, and everybody's in there, and they don't have to worry about jet lagging their guys, flying them in and then flying them back. So, you know what? I probably listen. It's a buy. The way I look at it is a buy. It's an automatic win in the first round, and now all of a sudden we got to get a win in that first round. So I would much rather have an automatic bid to the West Finals. But as long as I'm not feeling hurt or banged up, it'll be nice to, provided we're playing well at the end of the season, keep things rolling for sure.
So the second one I want to pick up on, if you happen to play at home in the playoffs or any time, you said Saskatchewan, and this is actually the pronunciation of Saskatchewan has been a topic of debate among announcers.
I know, it's supposed to be Saskatchewan. I keep saying right? Saskatchewan. It's supposed to be win. I know. I'm not. The Saskatchewan listeners are not happy with me right now, so I apologize. Yeah.
Well, it's funny because it came up when I know my buddies Andy McNamara and Brian Shanahan went in and did some games at the playoffs, did your finals, and they were getting ripped by some people for saying Saskatchewan. And Shanny and I were at a game later, and he says, "What is this about Saskatchewan? I think it's Saskatchewan." I said, "No, it's Saskatchewan. It's just you just kind of let it just kind of drift off at the end." And he's like, "Well, I don't know. Like, I'm from Toronto, and you know, we don't care. Like, because in Toronto, obviously, and you're there, everyone says Toronto." And he says, "We don't care if people come in and say Toronto and hit the T. Like, you don't pronounce the T, but we're not going to get upset." And it was this big debate. Now, we were at the bar after the game and had a beer or two when this came up. So, you know, he was maybe a little more animated than otherwise. It's pretty funny that it does become little things and can become big topics. But he is
such a clear indicator that you're not a native Saskatchewanderer if you're up in the Saskatchewan and not the Saskatchewan.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah,
you know, I got to work on that. Got to work on that for
sure. Just let it kind of fade at the end.
It's interesting because I think before I got to Saskatoon, I always called it Saskatchewan, and then now all of a sudden, I don't know. I'm like, I'm in my head about it, and I'm thinking too much about it. But anyways, I'll try and fix that.
It's like when you're on a breakaway and you have too much time to think. Like I've watched you, like, you know, a lot of guys, you get a breakaway and there's somebody pressing you and you got to just do your thing. You're great. If you have all kinds of time to think about your shot, it's trouble.
It's true. I can't remember the last time one of our guys scored on a penalty shot. And it's not like we get a ton of them, but our old guys, they're automatic if they get a breakaway in a game, but you give them a penalty shot where you got to blow play dead. Set everything up, all right, run in, everybody's watching you, and all of a sudden, for some reason, the conversion rate on those seem to be a lot lower than if they just happens naturally in a game. So I think there's something to it.
There was a great penalty shot moment. I was in Toronto for a game when Georgia was there. Great close game, went down to a one-goal game at the end, and Georgia gets a penalty shot. Lyle Thompson comes in, and I think everyone in the building is thinking, he's going to score because it's Lyle Thompson, and no goalie has much of a chance against Lyle when he does his thing. And Lyle makes a killer move, throws it, ball goes flying up out of the way. It's a save. And Nick Rose, big celebration. We're like, wow, that was a great save. Don't know where he got it. And then you see the replay, and Lyle had him beat by about a foot and a half, and it just rang off the crossbar.
Ball off the bar.
yeah, it was classic. And we should have known just by the way it came out, but Rosie was just celebrating so emphatically. It's like, wow, he must have had that stop. But
he asked Rosie, that's all he gave him to shoot at, right?
That's right. He only had that little spot. He couldn't get in there. okay, so we've talked about the way the D is going, the offense and the coaching, and we haven't really talked about Evan Kirk, who obviously is not having quite the success he would like either. I know you guys were pretty excited when he really found his stride last year, I thought, like towards the end of the season. And I've talked to him about this, that he felt it took him a while to really get comfortable with the new defense, with all the new guys, all the new things to get adjusted to. And it kind of looks like he's going through the same process again, which probably goes back to what we were talking about. But if you talk to him about how he's feeling.
I haven't talked to him since the end of the game on Saturday night, but we've had lots of talks throughout the season about, you know, he's constantly giving input during video and stuff like that, and talking with the man down, and we have open discussions to talk about what the best way to defend this is, and he's obviously a very smart guy and has lots to contribute to the sort of schemes and how we want to approach things. And I think with Evan, obviously, I don't think he's been happy with this play, but I mean, I don't think we can be happy with our play in front of them. We've left them, you know, hung out to dry a number of times, and he's actually made some phenomenal saves when we did not deserve a save. And then, you know, I'm sure he's felt that there's been some saves he'd like back where, you know, we've maybe held teams to sort of a desperate outside shot that have seemed to get by him that normally wouldn't. But I was actually talking to our coaching staff after the game on Saturday night. And what I told them is, like, there's no one's got any doubt that Evan's our guy, and we have 100% faith in him. It just it feels like he's, to us, like, it's a great goalie that's just playing in the last couple games below what you would expect of him, but he's going to revert back to the mean, and he's going to, you know, play like the great goalie is. No one has any questions about, you know, Kirk's ability, and that's a nice thing. As guys, you know, regardless of what happens in a one or two or three game streak, guys are going to have confidence in Evan, and we know he's our guy, and obviously a proven champion, and was fantastic for us last year down the stretch and in the playoffs, and we'll know he'll find it. It's like you said, he's going through the same struggles that most of the guys on our back end are going through right now.
Yeah. Coming up, you've got a trip to Vancouver and then a return visit with Calgary where they come to Saskatoon. In between that, you've got Colorado. So you've got the two teams below you in the standings looking up at you, and then Calgary, who's sitting just ahead. So three obviously pretty critical games. So I guess now would be a good time for it all to kind of click suddenly on this weekend, right?
Yeah, that was the nice thing about dropping games to New England, Georgia, and Toronto, was that they were non-divisional games, and they weren't really... They hurt, but they didn't kill us. Now, these, you know, that loss to Calgary is obviously a big one, and it lets them slide ahead of us in the standings. But this stretch that you just mentioned is going to be massive for us. So we're not hitting panic just yet because, again, I've talked about all the things. We've got confidence in our group, and I think we've shown glimpses of excellence. But the clock is ticking now, so it's we really do need to start putting it together, and it's got to start this weekend, because if that doesn't happen, then we're really digging ourselves into a hole, and we're gonna be crossing the midway point of the season here pretty soon, and with any more divisional losses, and it could really start obviously we don't want to be in a position where we're fighting just to get in the playoffs, right? So
right.
Our goal is still to not just to make the playoffs, but to win the West and to claim home floor advantage for the West. So if we're going to do that, these next three are going to go a long way into doing that.
Really appreciate your time, and I know it's not always comfortable to call someone or message someone from a team that's on a three-game losing streak to say, hey, do you want to come on the show? And but I was confident that you would have very reasoned, very articulate approach to the whole thing. And I know you're always a good guy to talk to. So I do appreciate you coming on and just speaking so dispassionately and yet eloquently about the situation.
Well, you probably give me too much credit there, but always willing to come on. And I appreciate the opportunity to come on and chat. And look forward to doing it again sometime soon.
All right, that will wrap things up for this episode of Box La Beat on NLL Radio, also available via iTunes on Inside Lacrosse Podcasts. I am your host, Stephen Stamp. Thank you so much, lacrosse friends, for being with me for another episode. Hope you enjoyed the conversations with Curtis Dixon and Chris Corbeil as much as I did. Two terrific guys, absolute beauties in this game of lacrosse. So glad to have had them on the show this week and to have had you with me. And I look forward to seeing you next week on Box La Beat.